Good evening. Here come bad news, talking this and that. Well, give me all you've got, don't hold back. Well, I should probably warn you, I'll be just fine. No offense to you, don't waste your time. Here's why, because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof, because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you, because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do. Those were the lyrics from a song by Pharrell Williams called Happy. Everybody is trying to be happy. The American dream, which is rooted in the Declaration of Independence, proclaims that all men are created equal with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's interesting that it doesn't say that we have the right to happiness, but we have the right to the pursuit of happiness. And I think most people are still stuck in that pursuit without actually being happy. This evening we're going to look at a twin sister of happiness called contentment. Contentment in a sermon entitled Mud Pies. What is contentment? Contentment means that you are satisfied in your circumstance with what you have. You are satisfied in your circumstance with what you have. Max Lucado, in his book, The Grip of Grace, wrote this definition. He said, a state of heart in which you would be at peace if God gave you nothing more than he already has. I've divided the sermon into three parts, and this evening we will look at these three parts. In the first section, we will look at signs of negative discontent. Then we will look at the problem of negative discontent. Then we will look at, finally, how to be content. Signs of negative discontent. In our first section, not all discontent is bad. There is a positive discontent that's not bad. In fact, it is necessary to have some amount of discontent in your present circumstance so that you can achieve more for growth and ambition. You need to have some amount of discontent in your current spiritual condition so that you can strive to be more spiritual. Strive with the help of God to seek him more and to honor him more. But there is also a discontent that does not lead to growth. It is a negative discontent. It is a backward-looking discontent. So I want to differentiate between a positive, forward-looking discontent and a negative, backward-looking discontent. And it is the negative, backward-looking discontent that we will be primarily concerned about this evening. So let me give you some signs of negative discontent. Now, if you've been in the medical field on any level, you've heard the signs of a stroke, and it is usually remembered by the mnemonic FAST, F-A-S-T. And F is for facial drooping, A is for arm weakness, S is for slurred speech. And when you have FAS, which are the signs of a stroke, then T, it's time to call somebody, time to call the emergency department, time to get treatment. So those are the signs of a stroke. And so we're going to look at four signs. And if you have one or more of these signs, it's possible that you have negative discontent. The first sign that I want to talk about is comparison with others that leads to envy or jealousy. Comparison with others that leads to envy or jealousy. James chapter 3 and verse 16 says, "For where jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there is disorder and every evil thing." Comparing with others all the time can be on very shaky ground, because we can move easily from comparing to complaining to envy and jealousy. So if you're the kind who can compare with no the propensity for envy or jealousy, then go ahead and compare. But that's not usually the case. The second sign of negative discontent, if you're constantly grumbling or complaining, whether it's about people or circumstances. A less formal word for complaining is whining. If you find yourself whining all the time about random things and everyday things, then it's probable that you have another sign of discontent. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 9 and 10 reads, "Nor let us try the Lord as some of them did and were destroyed by the serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer." This is talking about the people of Israel that were going from Egypt all the way to Canaan, and throughout their journey, as God was leading them, they were constantly complaining, grumbling, whining, always unhappy. They often angered God to the point that God destroyed many of them because of their constant grumbling. Some people are not happy no matter what they have. If you complain more than you are grateful, then maybe you have negative discontent. But if you complain and it leads to positive action, that's a good thing. That's a positive discontent. For example, Elon Musk is an inventor who was once traveling from his home in California to the Los Angeles International Airport, and he was stuck in traffic. He was so unhappy by the fact that he was stuck in traffic that he went and he started a company called the Boring Company, which is a company that bores tunnels underneath the road so that cars can go faster through those tunnels. So his discontent and his unhappiness resulted in positive action. That is a positive discontent. But many of us are not there. We just have negative discontent, and we're always looking back and complaining and grumbling. A third sign of negative discontent is if you are always wishing alternative realities. If you're always wishing for impractical things in the past or the future, and you always say, well, I wish it were this way, I wish it were the other way. There is a fine line here, because we want to learn from our past. We want to learn from the mistakes of our past so that we don't continue them. But if we are at a point where we are constantly thinking alternative realities, as if things could be different, if only they would just be slightly different, without it leading to any positive outcome, then maybe it's a sign of negative discontent. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 18 says, "Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward." Enjoying the present in the presence of God without constantly regretting the past. A fourth sign of negative discontent that I see is a greed for money and possessions. A greed for money and possessions. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. Hebrews 13 and verse 5 says, "Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have." It doesn't say keep your lives free from money. It says keep your lives free from the love of money. Anybody can have the love of money. It doesn't need to be only a rich person or a poor person. Either a rich or a poor person can have the love of money. The entire advertising industry is built on the fact of creating discontent with the present and an inordinate desire for more. We encounter countless advertising images during the course of our everyday life, Many of these images are idealized, not real images, but idealized images, and they represent life as it is imagined, not as it actually exists. In the magazine American Behavioral Scientist in February 1, 1995, Marsha Richens wrote a fantastic article entitled Social Comparison, Advertising, and Consumer Discontent, in which she used social comparison theory and argued that exposure to idealized images leads consumers to compare, often unconsciously, with their own lives with those represented in those idealized images. Then these repeated exposures to these idealized images raises our expectation of life and changes our perception on how life ought to be, especially in terms of material possessions. And this constant expectation of life creates consumer discontent and an increased desire for more. In the second section, we will look at the problem of negative discontent. Why is it that God hates negative discontent? It's the same reason why a parent would dislike a child's behavior if he or she is constantly unhappy. No matter what you did, no matter what you gave, no matter what circumstances you provided for your child, if they are constantly unhappy, that is the same reaction that God will have for a person who has negative discontentment. I see three problems with negative discontent that God will have with us. First is that it shows ingratitude for his deeds in the past. It shows ingratitude for his deeds in the past. God has done so much for us in the past, and we somehow forget all of that, and in one moment we are complaining about the most frivolous of things in the present. One of my favorite verses in scripture is this verse in Isaiah chapter 51 and verse 1. Isaiah 51 and verse 1. It says, look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. Look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. We all have seen quarries where there's just this empty space of granite. It's disorganized, it's irregular, it's not smooth, it's just a mess, and people come, dig out the granite, and take it and sell it, or whatever rock it is. If you were a piece of granite from the quarry, and you were taken and now shaped, and let's say that now you are a piece of rock in a palace. You may be a stone in a palace complaining about the noise in the palace, for example. Remember that once you were in a quarry. Remember the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. We have short-term memory loss many times. We easily forget the things that God has done in the past because of some silly circumstance in the present. God wants us to thank him. In Luke chapter 17 is a story of how 10 lepers came to Jesus. And Jesus looked at them and said, go show yourselves to the priests. And so these 10 lepers, in those days having a skin disease like leprosy, was an untouchable disease where you had to stay outside of the city limits and you could not come into the temple. But Jesus says, go show yourself to the priests. And so these people, they head towards the temple and the priest. And as they go, they look at their hands and they see that their hands are not leprous anymore. And so of the 10 of them, 9 people continue to walk, one of them turns around and comes back to where Jesus was and thanks him, falls down at his feet and thanks him. You know what Jesus said? Do you think he said, "Oh, that's okay, it was just another day for me"? No. He didn't say that. He said, "Where are the other nine? Didn't 10 of you get healed? Where are the other nine?" You see, Jesus wants us to thank him. But often, by showing discontent, we show ingratitude for his deeds in the past. In 2011, João Pereira de Souza is a 71-year-old retired bricklayer and part-time fisherman who came from an island village near Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. He saw a small penguin that was starving and covered in oil on the beach. His house is right next to the beach. So he took this little penguin home and nursed it and gave it fish and warmth and shelter and a shade, essentially. He nursed it till the penguin got well. And then he set it free back in the wild. A few months later, the same penguin came back and stayed with him for 8 months. And it happens every year. The penguin goes away but comes back as a sort of a thank you and stays with him for 8 months of the year, then goes away for 5,000 miles, then comes back all the way to spend time with him. Even a penguin shows gratitude to a human who saved him. The first problem with negative discontent is that it shows ingratitude for his deeds in the past. The second problem with it is that it shows contempt for his promises for the future. Discontent ignores the fact that God has this amazing plan for his children. He has an amazing plan for his children. It's not just any ho-hum plan. It's an amazing plan, which no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind can conceive what God has prepared for his children. So God has this amazing plan for the future, and some random circumstance happens today and we get discontented. Psalm chapter 37 and verse 7 reads, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him." The third reason why negative discontent is not good, it shows disdain for his presence in the present. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5, it reads, "Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, 'Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you.'" Did you see that? Did you see how the author of Hebrews combined contentment with the presence of God? He says, "Be content with what you have because God has said, 'I will be with you.'" When we are discontent, we have disdain for the presence of God. You know, when a couple is newly married, you usually get married because you like the other person, you like spending time with the other person, unless, of course, somebody married for money. But if you didn't marry for money and you married because you actually like the other person and you like to spend time with the other person, the presence of these two people together is the thing that brought them together in marriage, not material things. But as time goes on, somehow it changes from the joy of the presence of the people in the relationship together to other material things. And the same thing happens with God. When we initially came into the presence of God, we loved to stay in the presence of God. But somehow we have moved away and we started desiring other things that are not the presence of God. Other things that God gave us freely. And we started to seek the gifts more than the giver. And so we replace long-term joy and contentment with short-term happiness and discontentment. So we come to the last section of this sermon. How can we be content? I want to tell you three things in this section, how to be content. The first is that contentment is learned. It is a learned attitude. It is not by accident. It's like learning French or guitar or Latin or theology or surgery or whatever. It requires hard work, discipline, intention, and deliberate effort. Contentment is an attitude irrespective of the circumstances. So no matter how terrible the circumstance, it doesn't matter. You and I can be content. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, Paul says this amazing sentence. He says, I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. He has learned to be content. It does not come by accident. It is not a natural inclination. It is a secret that needs to be learned. How do you learn anything? How do you learn, for example, French? You start from ignorance, you take some baby steps, and then you build on it. And as you build on it, with practice and discipline and commitment and perseverance, over time, you will learn French. And that's how you learn the secret of contentment. Little by little, you start somewhere. And it has nothing to do with how rich you are, educated you are, your social position, your circles, nothing. You can be a very poor person or a very rich person and still need to learn the secret of contentment. In Job chapter 36 and verse 11, it says, if they obey me and serve him, they will spend the rest of their lives in prosperity and their years in contentment. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 23, the fear of the Lord leads to life. Then one rests content, untouched by trouble. It is God that gives contentment. The second point about how to be content is that ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss. It is okay not to look. It is okay not to look. If this is your life circumstance, it's okay not to look outside. Let me give you two examples. I'll give you one positive example, and then I'll give you a negative example. A positive example is, let's say that you went to your boss and you asked for a raise. And your boss said, sure, I will give you a raise of, say, $1 more per hour. And you are super happy. You come out from your boss's room and you're extremely content. You're extremely happy. You have a spring in your step. And then you find a colleague of yours, which is an equal colleague of yours, received a raise of $2 per hour more. At that time, your happiness and your contentment goes away. Now you're sad and unhappy. In a way, it is good not to know. Ignorance is bliss. It would have been better for you in that circumstance not to know. Let me give you a negative example. Let's say that you have a very rare but non-consequential disease. It is a benign condition, not a big problem. The doctor says, you know, it's so benign that you can come back once a year just for a regular checkup. Nothing serious. And then you go and you do research and you find somebody in your neighborhood that died from that particular disease. Even though it is so rare, somebody died. Now you're unhappy because even though it's a benign disease, somebody died from it. It was better not to know. It was better not to know about this other situation. There are things in our lives that we live in a certain circumstance, but outside of that, there are certain things that we need not know. Firstly, contentment is learned. Second, ignorance is bliss. It's good not to know. Thirdly, and my last point today, is that there is another choice. There is always another choice. Most of our frivolous complaining and whining is because things are going pretty well. Let me explain. Imagine that you went to work, and as you were driving to work, you had a couple of extra red lights that you usually don't have. We complain about it. Imagine that instead of the red lights, you were driving to work, you had a flat tire. Would you now complain about the red lights? No, because the red lights seem like a good option at this time, because you have a flat tire. What if you went to work the next morning and your car got crushed from one side, completely smashed? Would you then complain about the flat tire or the red lights? No, because you are in a much worse circumstance now. The flat tire and the red lights seem like good things at this point. Or what if you went to work in the morning and your car got smashed and your leg got cut off below your knees? Would you then complain about your car getting smashed? Or about the flat tire or the red lights? No, because you are in a much worse position. The fact that we complain about the red lights all the time shows that we are doing pretty well. Shows that we have actually been blessed without having a flat tire, without having a car totaled, without having our legs cut off below the knees. We think that we should have whatever we want, but there's always a choice of getting nothing, because we don't deserve anything. Max Lucado, in his book, The Grip of Grace, wrote, "What if God's only gift to you were his grace to save you? Would you be content? You beg him to save the life of your child. You plead with him to keep your business afloat. You implore him to remove the cancer from your body. What if his answer is, 'My grace is enough'? Would you be content? You see, from heaven's perspective, grace is enough. If God did nothing more than save us from hell, would anyone complain? If God saved our souls and then left us to spend our lives leprosy-struck on a deserted island, would he be unjust? Having been given eternal life, dare we grumble at an aching body? Having been given heavenly riches, dare we bemoan earthly poverty?" You see, we don't deserve anything, so anything we get should be a bonus and should result in praise. Rather, we think about the things we don't have because we think we deserve it, and it leads us to ingratitude. But to be content, we need a resetting of choices. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6, it says, "But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take nothing out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content." There is always another choice, and that other choice is that we are not supposed to have anything. Let me give you three examples. In my office a few months ago, I have three surgical assistants, and one surgical assistant decided to leave. And so we've always had three surgical assistants for as long as I can remember. One of them decided to leave, and so once she left, we left amicably. Once she left, I realized that the work in the office is not enough for three people, and two people can do the work in the office. So I decided not to hire a third person again. So I had to break the news to the other two surgical assistants. So I brought them into my office, and this is how I presented it. I didn't say that I was not going to hire a third assistant. Instead, I said, I prefer to have only one assistant. But I think I will try it out in the immediate future with two assistants. You see what I did there? There would have been discontent if they realized that the third assistant is not coming back. But once I changed the choices and I said, you know, actually I need only one assistant, and one of them was in danger of losing their job, then having only two assistants seemed to be the better option. Let me give you a second example. When my kids complain about things in the house, they have their own rooms and they share their rooms, or they share their beds, they share their toys, they share whatever. They complain about it. I show them pictures of some churches that I'm associated with, where I've seen pictures of these people that live in a single room, thatched roof, single room. And I show my children these pictures whenever they are prone to complain about something in the house. And I am basically resetting their choices and showing them the other choice, that the other choice is that you get nothing. And therefore, what you have now is beyond great. And sometimes when my children complain about food, for example, I heard the story of how in Haiti, some children who don't have food to eat, they take mud and strain it so it's fine. They mix butter and salt in it and make pies with it and dry it in the sun. So they mix butter, water, salt, and mud, dry it, and they eat mud pies. There's always another option. Whenever we are prone to have discontentment, we must always consider the option of mud pies. Thank you.